inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
Ramon, what's the biggest mistake that you see investors making today?
I think sometimes they focus on the wrong thing. And sometimes maybe they focus on maybe door counts, how many houses they want, how many doors, instead of actually looking at how profitable each property will be.
And you actually made that mistake early on when you were starting out, right?
Yes. To me, I just wanted to buy as much as possible and get to 50 doors. I felt that if I got to 50 doors, then I was successful.
Trying to get to 50 rental properties didn't end well for Ramon. He ended up losing all of his properties in foreclosure and having to declare bankruptcy. On the podcast today, we're going to see if we can figure out exactly what he did wrong to make sure that we don't make the same mistakes as we're building out our rental portfolio. Joining us on the show today from Kalamazoo, Michigan, is Ramon Huerta. We'll take a really quick break to thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll meet Ramon. Whether you've been buying rental properties for years or you're looking to buy your very first rental property, the very first thing you want to do before you go out and find a great deal is to figure out your financing. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and her specialty is helping investors finance rental properties. Chaley has a special limited-time offer just for our listeners. She will pay for your appraisal up to $500 when you close a loan with her. Just mention you heard about this on the Rental Income Podcast. If you want more details or if you're ready to get started today, just go to ridgelendinggroup.com. That's RIDGE. lendinggroup.com, NMLS 42056. A good deal on a rental property isn't going to last very long. To win properties today, you need to move quickly when a deal comes on the market, but it takes time to analyze a property. I want to let you know about an app where you can analyze deals on your phone in seconds. It's called Ask Rick. That's R-I-C for Rental Income Calculator. You can analyze a deal with the push of a button. You can figure out the rent, your mortgage payment, your expenses, and figure out the cash flow. If the numbers make sense, you can make an offer right there on the app, or you can send a calendar invite to your agent to see the property in person. Ask Rick is currently offering a free 7-day trial. Just search for Ask Rick in the App Store or go to Just Ask Rick. That's R-I-C. JustAskRick.com. Ramon, I really want to figure out what went wrong with building out your portfolio. Let's start at the very beginning. Tell me what you were thinking as you were getting started buying rentals.
When I first started out, it was just about volume, and I was trying to get to, my number was 50. And I just thought as soon as I got to 50 doors, then I would be looked at kind of as a serious investor. So that was really my focus, is how can I buy and get to 50.
Okay. And so you weren't thinking about profitability at all, or you wanted to make a certain amount per door. You just thought if you got to 50, you would have untold riches and you would be set.
Yeah, so it almost was just kind of like almost that appearance to say, you know, like, hey, I own 50 properties,
right?
Or I have 50 doors. I think that was more, I think I wanted it to make it so bad so fast, that's what I was kind of concentrating on. And early on, when I first got started, some of the materials that I was reading and stuff like that, they were saying that, you know what, it's fine as long as you're making like $50 a door, and you know, you stack them up, and then you know, you have 10, you have 15, you have 20, all that will kind of add up, and you're going to be okay,
right?
But that's not the reality of it.
Sure. And when you say $50 a door, is that $50 above your mortgage payment?
Yes, after your principal, interest, and some minor repairs, and as long as you were cash flowing $50, $100, it was okay because you were in it for the long run.
Sure. And what year was this when you were starting out?
I started off in 2000.
2000. Okay, so the market was appreciating back then, and is that kind of what you were thinking, that hey, the market's going to appreciate, and it was appreciating. So was that your goal, that get as many properties as you can and they're going to appreciate and you're going to make millions?
Yeah, and it kind of all work its way out. I mean, yeah. I was just naive enough to think that way. It's just like, just buy, acquire,
right.
And it'll all kind of just work its way out at the end.
Sure. And then, did you start having vacancy and repairs come up and you just couldn't cover it?
Well, yes. And some of the stuff that I was purchasing was just older houses, you know, at lower price point, just like many when they get started, they're always looking at, you know, the lower price point, that value add, and which was okay. But I didn't think about, or I wasn't thinking, okay, what about 5 years down the line? Right. What about when these roof starts going bad, once you have a major repair, like a furnace or something like that, that extra $100 that you're making, that $1,200 extra year is not going to cover,
right.
You know, those expenses. And I wasn't thinking about that in the beginning.
Sure. I mean, you have one water heater go and, you know, that's going to suck up a big portion of your extra cash flow for that month, right?
Well, yeah, just like how you mentioned, just one water heater going bad or, you know, an appliance or something like that, mm-hmm. where you start, you know, anything that's going to be above $500 right away, just, you know, eats away at that $50, right. That $100 fast, you know, let alone you add, you know, a roof repair or something like that.
Right.
So all that stuff just kind of started adding up. And then some of the vacancy was not that big of an issue for me. But it was more or less the repair and just the upkeep of the properties.
Sure. So you would just put extra money in, like if you couldn't cover a hot water heater for that month, for example, were you just putting extra money in from your job to keep
things
going?
Yes. And early on, it was just, I mean, I really didn't look at it as a business. It was more or less just kind of a hobby. I didn't mm-hmm. think of it as a hobby, but I wasn't serious about it.
Right.
So I did end up being pouring my own money into it. I had a regular W-2 job. So it was just like extra, okay, this broke. All right. I pay for it up front. And then the more properties you acquire, then the more, you know, now you have a greater risk mm-hmm. of something else happening.
Sure. When you were buying properties, were you putting money down or were you doing creative financing?
I was a little bit of both. I mean, I did do some normal financings, FHA loan, and then I would just buy it. I'd move into it and do some renovations and stuff like that, and then just turn it into a rental and then just buy something else.
Okay.
I did do a couple of land contracts also and stuff and get a little bit creative on that aspect.
And then when did things go bad? Like how did, because you ended up getting foreclosed on a bunch of times. It ultimately led to a bankruptcy. How did that happen?
It just kind of started spiraling. Like I said, I couldn't cover these larger, you know, needing a roof or something like that. I did do some refinancing. Back then, you were able to refinance, you know, 100-125% of the value of the home. So then I started, you know, just going upside down in these. And then I would take care of these repairs, but now my monthly payment went up for, you know, $150 or something like that. Or I reset it already. You know, maybe I was already 5-6 years into it and then I refinance it. So now I start another 30-year, you know, payment plan and stuff like that. So it was like I was getting by. I was doing this. I was kind of following what everybody else was doing. I'd go, you know, I'd go to the bank and they'd be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, talk to a lender. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, we can, you know, we can get you out of this. You can do a home equity line, you know, line mm-hmm. or something like that. So everybody was like, back then, it was just easy to get money.
Right. So you were just kind of buying time, it sounds like, that.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I was just kind of putting a Band-Aid on something. I wasn't fixing it. I was just kind of like buying me some more time.
Right. And then what happened? Like when did everything kind of blow up, or how did it blow up?
It just started with properties, and there were some really good ones. And then I started taking from those that were cash flowing or doing really good. And then, you know, feeding these poorer ones, or the ones that had more vacancies, the one I just had problems with tenants. Early on, it was like I didn't scream properly. It was just kind of like I believed everything everybody said. And, you know, and then you just didn't want to be the bad guy and put somebody else out. And they would tell you, oh, I'll pay you next month or this is going to happen. And you're like, oh, okay. Until you got to the point where now you couldn't cover those payments. Then you were, you know, a month behind and it was like 2 months behind and you're just paying catch up. And it just kind of spiral and you start taking it from your good property that's producing and then covering the bad one. And it just, yeah, it just kind of just
spiral
snowball effect. Yeah. Yeah. Spiral down. And then next thing you know, you're just, you're already down and there's really nothing else that you can see, you know?
Yeah. And then, so you thought, okay, I've just got to declare bankruptcy to get out of this.
Yeah. As soon as, you know, I just started losing some of the properties, you just start kind of, and it was, there's also, well, for me, it was this kind of like this shame, you know, like I thought like, man, I was on track. I was telling everybody about real estate and how it was great. And I was an investor and things of that nature. And then, you know, things start crumbling and falling apart. I believe if I'd have just seeked out some help with some other investors or other people that were really into it. And I think I could have wrote it out. I still would have. I would have needed to cut some of those and take some of those losses, and definitely. But there was some that I could probably could have kept and wrote it out. But at that point, it was just like just this shame over me, and it's like how you know I just felt like I was just a failure, and I just failed, and I just took the loss,
right?
And all of a sudden, one day, I just didn't own anything.
All right, so you're totally out of it. You've gotten all your properties foreclosed on. You've declared bankruptcy. You've got a clean slate. And this is the part that's kind of amazing to me, is that you reinvented yourself and you started buying properties and I with cash. And I got to hand it to you, because a lot of people might have just given up at this point after what you had been through. And said, you know what, real estate just doesn't work, or it's not for me. What made you think that, heck, I was just doing this wrong, and I need to do things differently, and I can make this work? Like, what was it that, because I feel like if what happened to you happened to me, I maybe would have just put my head in the sand. Like, how did you reinvent yourself?
I just, once I kind of got over, that and just said, you know what? Yes, I love, you know, no more was just trying to keep, you know, you work so hard to just, and try to figure out and get creative. And then all of a sudden I just had to let it go and just say, you know what? Like, this was just bad.
Yeah.
And once I decided to do that and, you know, I licked my wounds and I always knew that real estate was the right vehicle. I just, once I started seeing why things went bad and what I was doing, I just started looking at that and said, you know what? Okay, it's the right vehicle. It was just the wrong driver.
Right. Okay.
I was the driver, you know, and I was looking at things differently and I was buying things that I shouldn't have. And just to say that I was, and I said, you know what? I'm okay. If I just have one house, if I just have two houses, like it's, I feel good about it. And then just started to look at what things were important and stuff and just started, taking one step at a time, started going to, you know, just surrounding myself with other individuals that were in the business. And of course I couldn't just get a mortgage anymore. I just, you know, it just took a while, had to get creative and stuff like that on trying to find stuff. And I knew it was going to take me longer to do it, but I was fine with it. I accepted it. And I said, no longer was I looking for approval from everybody else. I was like, you know what? I'm good with just having one house.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And you know, really that it sounds like in the early days, you were maybe trying to impress people a little bit with trying to say you have 50 rentals, but now you've got a much smaller portfolio and it seems like you're more profitable and you maybe don't even care what anyone thinks.
I just, you know, I felt like I had this chip on my shoulder and I just had to prove myself and show everybody and stuff like that. And I just added this extra pressure that I shouldn't have.
Right.
You know? And now it's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
And I'm more selective on the properties that I got. And before it wasn't that goal is like, oh, I have to buy something this year.
Right.
I have to buy two properties, something like that. I'm like, you know what? If the right deal comes and, you know, it fits, then we'll get creative and make it happen. Before it was just like everything was creative. You know,
right.
Any property that came down my desk is like, okay, how can I acquire this? What can I do? And then that's when you just, you know, you get too creative and put yourself on that, you know, on that ledge. And I sleep a lot better now.
Yeah, I think that's just such a good lesson that you don't have to have a big rental portfolio. I mean, you're really profitable today. So let's talk about your portfolio today. So are you buying different types of properties than you bought back in your old portfolio?
Yes. Now most of my portfolio now is single family homes.
Okay.
And I just started spending time into the property and really looking at it. It was like, okay, who's going to be my tenant? Who do I want to attract? And what, you know, where do my numbers need to be to make it to be okay. And yeah, like I said, it just took longer in between properties and I just was more selective.
Mm.
And it was just easier because then it was easier to say no to a lot of deals.
Right.
And say, you know what, it doesn't fit. It might be a great deal for somebody else, but right now what I'm trying to do, it doesn't fit that. And then you just, you know, too many times I struggled because there were some good deals that came by and I'm just like, man, I think I can make this work. I think I can, you know, and then once I said no and it went away and then I looked at it and I said, you know what? I would have been in this house for like a year.
Right.
And it would have just delayed me on everything else and stuff. So it
right.
was like, that was the right move.
Are you in better neighborhoods today than you were back then?
No, I think I just, I'm the same neighborhoods, just on different streets.
Okay.
I'm very selective on where I am. I do a lot of driving. I look at it and say, what is my tenant going to see? Or how are they going to feel driving through here and stuff like that? And I just, I was more sensitive to those things than just, you know, the numbers or,
okay.
I don't care. Just, it's a, you know, a house that I can buy and we'll make it work, you know, and if the parking was not there, like I said before, you just got real creative. It's like, oh, I'll figure it out. Maybe they won't have a vehicle. Maybe, you know, and I started looking at those things. You know what? Maybe I need a house with a garage. Maybe I need to make sure that there's enough parking, you
right.
know, and maybe it needs to be a house where there's not a lot of rentals. Maybe it's, you know, a better mix of owner occupant and rentals and stuff.
Right.
So just started looking at things like that.
And today you only buy properties with cash. You don't want to have anything to do with banks anymore.
I did for the beginning. I know that leverage is good. I just had to get better at it. You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
I just had to be able to tolerate it more, to be able to make more wiser decisions. I felt because it limited going cash. It limited what I can just buy. I just can't say yes to everything. So it made me think about it a little bit more. And now I'm not opposed to doing some financing, but not all of it.
Is there any trick to saving the kind of money that you need to buy a house? Like, is there anything that you're doing that maybe our listeners could start doing?
I mean, you just have to do it. I mean, you just have to really, you have to cut back and you have to live below your means and say, okay, what, you know, and make sacrifices. It's different for everybody, but it definitely can be done.
Yeah.
And usually the first one will be hard and maybe the second one, but as you do it, you get a little bit more creative and, on how to save the money. And how to spend it too,
right.
Because now you feel it a little bit more. It's like, hey, I had to make these sacrifices. Maybe my family didn't go on a vacation this year because our goal was to, you know, buy another rental or something. So it becomes a little bit more meaningful.
So how is that cash flow today? I mean, today not having mortgages and having properties that, you know, I assume are crazy profitable. How has that improved your life, having that extra cash flow?
It's just made it easier, obviously, to continue to buy. But it's taken away that pressure of having to have that mortgage payment, having to turn that property over as soon as possible, and being a little bit more patient and selective on your tenants, where, you know, it's not like, oh, you know what, I have to find a tenant this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Because my payment is due right on the first. And if I don't find a tenant, then I can't make my payment. So that pressure just went away. And I said, no, you know, and you say no to a lot of people until you find your yes.
Right. I imagine, too, that it must be a good feeling, say, with the pandemic last year, you know, last March, when everything kind of shut down and nobody knew if anyone was going to pay rent, knowing that it's okay if you don't get rent from your tenants, it's not going to put you on the streets. Was that kind of did you feel like you were coming from a position of strength going into the pandemic?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I would look back to look at, and when I first started, and that would have been, I would have just lost it.
Yeah.
If, you know, I was just like one, two payments away from everything crumbling, that fear just, yeah. And this time I was like, you know what, whatever happens, happens. And, you know, we'll just kind of figure it out. And if, you know, it takes a couple of months for people to catch up or anything like that, you know, you just work through it. But I didn't have the pressure. And I was actually blessed. I didn't have any issues. All my tenants continued to pay. All of them continued to work somewhere remotely and stuff like that. I think I only had one tenant that was maybe about 2 weeks behind. But they told me, and, you know, said we'll work it out and stuff. And then 2 weeks later, they had their money and said, and didn't have any problems whatsoever.
What a great ending. I love that Ramon didn't give up on buying rental properties. He just figured out a different way to do things. And it sounds like he's got a much better portfolio today. If anybody is interested in investing in the Kalamazoo, Michigan area, Ramon is actually a full-time realtor, and he'd be happy to help you find something. I've got his contact information on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode328. I'd like to thank today's sponsor for making today's episode possible. It's Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. If you're looking to buy a rental property, whether you're just getting started or you want to add to your portfolio, definitely reach out to Chaley Ridge. She is a nationwide lender, and her specialty is helping investors finance rental properties. She has a ton of different loan programs, and she can find something customized to you for your situation. Chaley has a special limited time offer just for our listeners. If you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will pay for your appraisal up to $500. For more details, or if you want to set up a time to talk to Chaley, just go to RidgeLendingGroup.com. That's RIDGE, LendingGroup.com, NMLS 42056. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast today. If this is your first time here, make sure you subscribe. We put out new interviews every single Tuesday, and if you subscribe, you'll get notified as soon as they come out. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.